This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Staub Audio Engineering. If you have listened to any of the episodes, you have undoubtedly heard me talk about Mike and the phenomenal audio engineering work that he does. His mixes and masters are truly some of the best that I've ever heard. I love working with Mike on all of our Dreamfield tunes, on all of our Summit One tunes. He is an absolute wizard. Make sure to hit him up, inquire about mixing and mastering prices, and take your tracks to the next level. Oh, yeah. And Mike is also one of the nicest, kindest human beings you'll ever meet. Definitely hit him up and work with him.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all of the producers, artists, and creators that are tuning into the show. My name is Cody Christensen, and you are listening to the Chilled Samples Podcast. Welcome to the podcast, man. I am extremely excited to hear your story. George spoke extremely highly of you, so I'm really looking forward to having the opportunity to chat.
Nice. Well, I'm super happy to be here, and it's going to be interesting to let you know what we're working on and get closer to what you're doing as well. So let's get going.
Yeah, man. Well, Luke, just for the listeners that aren't familiar with your project, just let them know where you're based out of and what you do.
I'm from Sweden, and I run my own lo-fi project called Lo-fi Luke, and I also run the record label Clover Records, which is pretty much an extension to Lo-fi Luke. That's how it started. Lo-fi Luke is quite an experimental lo-fi project that is not necessarily always producing the typical lo-fi beats, if you get me. It's a little bit... Mm-hmm. Some lo-fi beats are more standard, some are more weird and stuff like that, and it's more of an experimental product that I'm putting out. That's pretty much what I'm working on right now.
Awesome. When did you start the Lo-Fi Luke project?
The Lo-Fi Luke project started about 2 years back. Previous to that, I was making pop music and EDM. So I started, just to get a story like from the beginning, I started making music maybe 10 years back, and I released a few tracks, got quite a bit of attention in the pop music scene. I got a contract signed to Sony Music, and it got like flying over there. And
wow.
It's super nice. But after a while, when you like worked with a major label, you start to question things, how they work, why they work in a certain way. And it all comes down to like the crazy splits and strange recoupable agreements and stuff like that. So I pretty much started doing my own research, because I was questioning myself, why do I have to give away such a big cut to a major label when all the money they spend on the marketing towards my project is still recoupable and they take a huge cut from it? So that question really started everything for me when it came to this project. So I started doing research of music marketing for about 1.5-2 years, and then I heard some tracks randomly. I hadn't listened to lo-fi at all before. I heard some tracks from Mondaloops, and I was like, this is great, and I wanted to put to practice my marketing research and see what I can do for myself without the label, and I like that kind of music. So that's pretty much how I started Lo-Fi Luke. So I put out a few tracks and started messing around with some ads and some playlists, and I really enjoyed the workflow on it. And I also got way better results from it than I actually expected, which just gave me an extra push to actually keep doing it. And the absolutely biggest change when it comes from pop and EDM music to lo-fi music is that it's a relaxing process to actually create a track, which is definitely not the case when it comes to mainstream music that is stressful. So that's how it started. And I started releasing music, started catching up with some friends, releasing with them. Tranquil Ted is one of them. And the guy I run the Clover Records with, together with George or Sushi. And we just kept producing, releasing tracks and marketing them. And along the way, I started to like collaborate with other artists. And when they saw the results we were getting on the track without releasing on any labels, they started asking us, can you help us promote our track, and can you help us with this and get our music out there, which is the core of what formed Clover Records, the label, because we started to get quite a few requests to help other artists promote their tracks, if you get me. So it was easier to just set it up that way, and I think that's been pretty well received from the artist, I believe, at least.
I love the story arc that you just shared, and I've followed a similar ish journey, and I love what you mentioned about the relaxing process of creating lo-fi beats. So I still produce and perform heavy electronic music, so dubstep, heavier future bass, hybrid trap. I still really enjoy that process. But for me, when I first began creating lo-fi beats, it felt like I could do whatever I wanted. It felt so creatively freeing in comparison to when I'm writing a dubstep tune. There's specific rules that you have to follow if you want it to be a dance floor banger. And so I share that story in respects to you, although I have never worked with a major label. So especially for the listeners that are maybe considering working with a major label, or if they've been approached by a major label and they don't know what to do, kind of walk us through that process. Like how were you producing pop music for somebody else? Were you creating pop music just for yourself? Like what did that look like?
Yeah. So, we're a group of three to begin with. It's two friends from my hometown that are already making their own project within like Swedish pop music before that, but we got together. We made one track in a few hours. That was more of a, we just made it like a simple, as a joke track. But it got some attention, and it didn't take too long before the labels started reaching out to us. Because if we're going to be super frank here when it comes to the labels, they are looking at numbers. The major labels are looking at numbers. If a track is making good numbers, they want to pick it up. They want to sign it. And they don't necessarily have to have an interest in the project, but they do want to sign the track because they will receive a very big percentage of the royalty income from that track with very little responsibility and very little risk. So what really threw me off when it came to the major labels is the split was insanely high. So I believe, I don't really have numbers, but I believe they took maybe 70% of the income, which is fairly standard, to be honest. And also, all of the money they put into the track was a recoupable cost towards the track. So let's say they put in $2,000 into marketing. My share of the income had to pay off those $2,000 before I was receiving any money, which just became a big loan. So you signed away 70%, but you also, all of the money they put in just becomes a big loan that you has to pay back, which becomes a really, really bad circle unless the track really goes viral or picking up in some other ways, like TikTok and stuff like that. So, but yeah, we have dialogues with both Sony Music, Universal Music, and Warner Music at that part, but we decided to go with Sony, which was, I was working with an A&R called Bjorn at the time, and he was really great. He was actually caring for the project. He wanted to help us get further and stuff like that. And somewhere along the way, we got a switch up in the A&R. I believe that he didn't have the same connection to us. Maybe he had some bigger artists, or he didn't feel the vibe of the songs we are creating. So it started falling off, and we were stuck in an artist deal on the major label of maybe 15 tracks. We had to release 15 tracks with Sony Music before we were getting free. And that part before, because the tracks also has to get approved by the label. You can't just put out 15 tracks. That's bad, and have the contract. But they have to approve it to really. They have to like it. So it was just getting like deeper and deeper into a role that I didn't enjoy at all. But we had some great times as well, and we also made some great numbers. That EDM project has streamed, I think it's a bit over 130 million, maybe 140 million right now. Wow. We had some charting tracks. Yeah. So it was great, but I didn't know very much about being an artist at that time, and there was a lot of stuff that we didn't really claim that we would need to claim, such as social media, a lot of the marketing aspects that we should have, like connected with the fans to keep them interested in what we're actually doing, and not that good song that would really fly and stuff like that. So I don't really blame the major label for the decaying numbers on the project. Mm-hmm. It was also lack of experience from our side. But in general, I don't recommend anybody working with a major label unless you are completely uninterested and unmotivated to do your own marketing. That's mm-hmm. how I would summarize it.
What was the name of the EDM project?
It's called Charlie Who. It's Charlie, and then it's Who, and then question mark after that. And the last release.
I'm excited to check it out.
Yeah. Go check it out after we're done here.
Well, and Luke, thank you for the insight into your personal experience with working with a major label. Now, for the lo-fi community specifically, I've heard of some major labels reaching out to artists and trying to gain similar deals. I personally haven't experienced it. I've just heard it floating around in the ether. But have you heard about like Universal and Sony trying to get involved with independent lo-fi artists?
Yes, I have actually released a few beats with Warner Music myself on Lo-Fi Luke. And I think it was Warner at least. It was a while back. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they are reaching out, and I think the major labels are not really, they haven't really been catching up on what's going on in the lo-fi scene, but they are getting more and more interested because it's getting more and more of a mainstream kind of music. But it's not mainstream, but it's still getting out there, and more listens to it, and you can see it on Spotify. They are making more and more editorial playlists. There's more and more posts about it, more and more lives on YouTube, and lo-fi is getting more of a mainstream topic when it comes to music, not as it was maybe 5 years ago, way before I started, when it was more underground, and just something that some people were listening to. But yeah, they are reaching out to artists, and in my case, they didn't want to sign my whole dialogue, or didn't want to sign like my whole project as Lo-Fi Luke. They wanted to sign a certain amount of tracks. So in my case, they signed, I think it was 5 tracks that they wanted to put out. And I created 5 tracks to them and they put them out. And that was that. We haven't had any dialogue after that. My thoughts regarding it is that they are probably trying to create their own playlist and fill it up with their signed artist tracks to like get income and start running ads for that. But I can't be sure, of course. Just guesses in my point.
Yeah, well, and it's going to be interesting to see how that changes the landscape if major labels become extremely involved within our community. And it may be, if lo-fi continues to grow, it may be inevitable. Major players in the music industry are also going to want to take a piece. But how do you anticipate that changing the landscape of lo-fi beats? And do you think that would be positive or negative if they really begin to infiltrate the independent lo-fi community?
I think it's already happening in some scale that big labels are infiltrating the independent scene of the lo-fi. And I think that I can actually feel the difference from when I started to where it is now. But it's really hard to say, and I don't really want to make any kind of guesses regarding it, but I think it's not going to get better for the artists. That's my guess.
Mm-hmm.
There's some labels that's working really hard to keep the things as good as they actually can be. Sleep Tales is one of them. College in the Dark Daniels is doing like a crazy amount of job to keep it like being genuine and fair to everybody. And his work is absolutely amazing. And he probably has the best curated playlist throughout all Spotify because he cares so much about the music. So I just want to give a big shout out to them. But while there's some players in the game, if we can call it that, that work that way, there's also some others that works in the opposite direction, more for themselves and stuff like that. So it's hard to say, but if, let's say they were a big player, or all the major labels were to really get them attention and interest in the lo-fi scene, it would probably get pretty messed up pretty quickly if they really wanted to do that.
Great shout out to Daniel and Sleep Tales, and we can speculate to what's going to happen, but if they want to get involved, they have enough money and enough resources that they will get involved. But I love what you said about just trying to do our absolute best of keeping the integrity of the community, and I'm assuming you and I faced a similar experience. When I first entered the lo-fi community from the electronic world, and I realized how much more open and accepting and helpful this community was, I realized that it's a diamond in the rough, so to say, in the music industry. I was absolutely blown away when I first started communicating with other lo-fi artists all across the world, because within the electronic scene, there's this sense of competition. You're trying to get on this festival lineup. You're trying to be direct support for this artist. And it just became so cutthroat, and the competitiveness almost became toxic.
Wherein is the word,
as soon as it does, man. And I'm still a part of that community. And I try to do my best to relay the essence of the lo-fi community, at least with the people that I work with in the electronic world, of just trying to get everybody within my network to realize if we help each other, we can all grow. We don't have to look at it as one of us is going to succeed. We can look at it as, we can all succeed. And that's what I feel within the lo-fi community, especially when I first entered it. So You moved from creating electronic music and creating pop music, and you discovered lo-fi through Mondo Loop. So kind of just walk us through like your first year within the lo-fi community and the first year of the Lo-Fi Loop project.
Yeah, so the first year was mostly me releasing independent music. I quickly met a guy from Sweden as well called Henrik. His lo-fi name is Gosom. I think you had it yep. here as well, right?
Yeah, so I've had him on the podcast, and then we also released an album together, so I know yeah. Henrik pretty well.
And
beautiful dude.
Yeah, and he's a great inspiration. I met him pretty quickly in my journey of Lo-Fi Luke, and we created quite a few tracks together, and he really showed me what a lo-fi track could sound like when it was well produced. So I think that was the first big milestone for me to actually meet Henrik and see how a track or a demo that I created, when I sent it over to him, how he could finish that up. And that really pushed me towards like getting a more proper sound to the tracks. I think I met him maybe a few months in the project. After that, I also started working quite a lot with Ted or Tranquil Teddy. He started a little bit later than me, and we lived pretty much next door, so we were going to the studio together, and we're having a really fun time. I think maybe the first 30 or 40 tracks we released was independent. Maybe half a year into making music, I started reaching out to some labels and got quite a nice response from them. And after that, it was just like rolling on pretty much to where it is today. Of course, I'm meeting new people, grabbing new connections and everything like that, but the project itself is not something too revolutionary to where it were when I started it, if you get me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love what you said about Henrik showing you what a really well-produced lo-fi track could sound like, because I have the same experience. So for my Dreamfield project, I'm actually teamed up with 67-year-old producer and guitarist from Minnesota. So he used to tour back in the 1970s, and so he just has this such this classic rock and roll style that only somebody that came from that classic rock and roll era can produce. And so I've worked with him, and then working with him and Henrik simultaneously, who Henrik has a ton of rock and roll experience,
yeah.
To be able to work with them to just create this style of lo-fi that I hadn't necessarily heard before. And I'm going to give a majority of the props to both Henrik and Kelly. They were definitely the masterminds behind the album, but to watch them work and then to hear Henrik's audio engineer abilities, and I guess even beyond the engineering abilities, but his ability to almost infuse like a future bass sound with beautiful guitar instrumentals into a high quality lo-fi production. It was a very impactful experience for me. And so shout out to Henrik. We can take a moment to gas him up, because it's a well deserved.
Yeah.
Do you guys live in a similar area of Sweden?
No, not really. We're in Sweden terms of distance, we're quite far apart, but for anybody living like in the US, it would probably be very close. I would be able to drive down to him in maybe 3 hours or something like that. We haven't actually mm-hmm. met yet. We had it on the schedule, but some personal things came up for me and everything else got put on hold. But I should probably reach out to him and schedule a meeting with him, because I really enjoy like talking and working with him. So, yeah.
I think that would be a beautiful lo-fi date that needs to happen. So, Henrik, if you're listening, you and Luke need to go on a lo-fi date. That'd be awesome. But yeah, what a special artist and human being to have in our community. So I'm really glad that you brought him up. But so Luke, you kind of explained the birth of the Lo-Fi Luke project. Now let's dive into the birth of Clover Records in just a little bit more detail. So,
yes.
Yeah. Just walk us through from the beginning for Clover Records.
Yeah. So, as I mentioned earlier, it's like the idea from it started from, some requests that needed help. And, since I was already really close with, Ted at the moment, and he were getting more and more involved in the music industry, I lifted dialogue with him and asked what he thought about it to start a label to help artists get their music out. And we knew at the time that there was a lot of labels going around already, but I also didn't have even though the experience from most of them were solid, I also felt like there wasn't too many of the labels that actually evolved their brand into a reliable business that was easy to work with for the artists, if you get me.
Mm-hmm.
So the fundamentals in Clover Records is that I wanted to solve all of the problems that I experienced when working with other labels. So there were I had some experiences with, I sent in tracks for review and never got an answer. I sent in some tracks that took 4 to 5 weeks to get a reply on. I actually had some labels reply after like 9 months. I got a reply 2 days ago that I sent in January. So, it's kind of crazy it's kind of crazy for me, since I've always had like a quite strong entrepreneur thoughts to my own like projects and how I work with things. So that is like the core fundamentals to Clorex. I really want to solve this. I don't want people to wait 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks to get a reply from us. We reply on everybody, to every track, and we try to give as good of feedback as possible when we have the time. Of course, right now it is a bit hectic because Ted just got a kid, and we're trying mostly to keep up. But so that formed the Clover Records, and we started off by the first release we ever made was a compilation album of 25 tracks. So I pretty much reached out to most of the artists that I had worked with Lo-Fi Luke and said, we are going to do this. We are making this label. We're putting together a compilation album and we are going to invest in it to really make this something good for the future. And it came together with 25 tracks with different artists, and we... I think it was a success in the when I look back at it, but it was also a lot of work that I didn't really know how to do in the beginning, but we got to learn really fast because there were so many problems that we had solved. There was so much research to be done, but I didn't really know what to research when it came to that. So I had to learn really fast when it came to these parts of how to actually run a label. And I've gotten some great feedback from people that is engaged with our community as well. So the first release was actually a compilation album. And after that, we started dropping releases every second week. And in the beginning, it was more of me asking artists to release with us. and not the other way around. And that's pretty much how every label start, I believe, at least, because no one knew about us except for the ones that already were on the album. We had to get everything up. We had to get a website good looking, and we had to, I invested maybe $20,000 into the label just in the first 3 months, just to get a solid website and all of the Facebook ads as we're running to really get the songs to get a fair amount of streams. Because something that is the most important for me when it comes to Clover is I really want to get the artists the results that they are expecting. I would feel bad if I were to release a track and it wouldn't get a fair amount of streams, because that is what is expected from a label when it comes to... They're sharing a cut to us for doing marketing and helping them get the track heard, and that's what we get paid for. So that is our responsibility to the artists, to actually put in as much work and as much money we can to actually get it rolling. So we were struggling quite a bit to have a reasonable last row result in the beginning. So it ended up with me showing in even more money, but I really believed in this. And at the time, I was also having a regular daytime job. So my ambition and my thought was all of the money I make on Lo-Fi Luke is going right back into the label, which is how I was able to fund it. If I didn't have a regular daytime job at that time, I would probably be bankrupt by now. But
yeah,
that's how it all got around. And about 6 or 7 months in, we started to get our playlist to do a fair amount of numbers. We started to land some editorials, and we also had gotten a hang of how to optimize our ads and really... make a good result towards the artist, and also not splurge our money into stuff that wasn't really working for us, which made us break even somewhere around there. And after that, we just keep investing pretty much all of the money into the brand right now. So, yeah.
Luke, that was spoken like a true entrepreneur, man. Just in regards to the amount of money that you put in up front, and then to continuously hustle while having your full-time job and still building the label. I respect that hustle so much, man, because one, you're assuming a risk, like $20,000. That's a lot of money to put up front to fund this business. And so I commend you for that, man. That's I have so much respect for that. And so Luke, you mentioned, and I also love this too. When you built Clover, you were focusing on solving problems. What were some of the main problems that you had faced as an independent artist that you wanted to solve for the artists that release with your record label?
Yeah, so the main thing was absolutely the return time of submissions. That was one of the things that I absolutely had to solve, and I also thought it was like the easiest way to solve it, because you only have to work harder. So that was pretty easy. We currently use a Discord bot in our Discord server that notifies us when someone puts in a track. And it notifies us when something has been there too long and stuff like that. So I mostly create or use tools to help me solve the problems. And this Discord bot has been really great. We started off with a Google form, which was harder to maintain. And the second one was I also released with some label that had insane cuts and didn't give any results. And I'm not sure if if they think of it the same way, but I think that's kind of weird. I don't really know what people have, what expectations artists have towards a label. Maybe our results are not meeting their expectations as well, but I released with some labels that maybe took a 70 or 80% cut of the tracks and generated 20 streams or something like that, and made me lift my eyebrow and something like this. This is not believe how it should be, at least. Maybe it would be fair for someone who didn't know how to distribute a track by themselves or stuff like that. But I think that's a bit weird.
And there's no need, I won't say any names in particular, but that's definitely a theme that I've seen happen, where artists want to release with labels just to say that they released with a label. And let's even say it's a 50% cut, but then there's no work on the back end marketing. And I think it's almost just a default response for some artists to want to work just with a label, just to say that they're working with a label. So I definitely experienced the same eyebrow raising moments when I first entered the scene and worked with some labels that didn't produce any results. And I'm like, well, why did I release with you? Mm-hmm. And that was a learning opportunity for me. So, I think it's a great problem to address, and it's only fair in all honesty. So I'm glad that you started Clover on that basis of like, hey, let's have a fair relationship.
Yeah, totally. For us, that's super important, and we always try to solve any problems and fix anything that's not as it should be as soon as possible. Ted, I want to make a big shout out to Ted as well, because he is still working his daytime job. He has got a kid, but he is still doing a crazy amount of work when it comes to replying to emails, distributing tracks. We're using the distributor Identity Music, and we have a very close connection with our, I don't know, A&R or whatever you call it, the distributor. He's got Alex. He's amazing as well. So big shout out to him. He is by far the best distributor I've ever worked with, and he helps us a lot as well. That's pretty much. We're just trying to cover all the things that annoyed me, and have people and artists have a good relationship with Clover when they release with us. And we want them to come back, because if people don't want to release with us, then we don't have anything to do there, because then we're probably doing a bad job, probably not giving them the results they want. We are maybe not having the image that they want. They don't believe in our beliefs or something like that. So I am, of course, speaking of an entrepreneur side of this. And when it comes to the results, I also believe that I've met a lot of artists that only that don't want to do any marketing. And when it comes to that, labels are a very good way to let someone else handle it, which is probably why those labels that doesn't maybe cover all those parts that I've been speaking of still get releases, because not everybody wants to be doing their own marketing. Not everybody wants to like study how Facebook ads works or how the Spotify algorithms works. But for me, that's some of the most interesting parts when it comes to music, because I wouldn't necessarily say I am I wouldn't say I'm a very good musician, but I have a kind of good ear for when it comes to what's expected from music and stuff like that. So, which is pretty much how I built my own project. Because I'm not a godly guitar player. I can't really play the keys very well, but I'm able to get it sounding in a way that's hopefully pleasant for the listener, because I've listened to so many great songs or so many great producers make this with talent alone. So, but a lot of the artists that are really good at making music don't wanna promote their music. Is my that's just my feeling that's what I feel, at least. I don't know if that's correct, but I've met a lot of people that don't want to promote their own music. They want to focus on producing and composing and stuff like that, and I totally respect that. That's probably why so many labels has work to do, because people want to focus on their production. So yeah.
Yeah, and Luke, I love the honesty that you shared in regards to marketing being a huge strength, and I feel the exact same way. So I participated in bands in like middle school and high school, and I even took some music classes in college, and I was surrounded by so many musicians that were so much more talented than me. Like not even close. Like as far as classically trained musicians, I was surrounded by people that blew me out of the water.
Yeah.
But what I did enjoy was marketing. That's what I went to university for. I have a bachelor's degree in marketing. And so I love the art form of marketing. But then the other arguably most important factor for me and my success within the music industry is the willingness and ability to work really hard. So all of those musicians that I was at university with, fortunately, I'm further than a lot of them, even though they're a lot more talented than me, but I've just had the willingness to work hard. And I can sense just from this conversation that you're a hustler, man. Especially when you were, working your full-time job and building up both Clover Records and Lo-Fi Luke simultaneously, like that's not easy. And so kind of walk us through your perception on working hard and productivity.
Yeah. So, life gets a little bit weird when you trying to start something on your own while still working. You pretty much has to dedicate all of your free time outside the work hours to do that. So you pretty much has to prioritize what you want in life. That was the case for me, at least. So I tried, of course, going out with friends and do as much as possible when I had the time, but my working days was like, I started at 8 and then I got home by 5 p.m. and I was in the studio maybe 5:30, and I was there to maybe 10 or 11 and sometimes longer than that, and I got way less sleep than I should, but back and I just kept doing it. And I think it's all about the priorities. It would be hard for me to keep up with everything that people want in life. So right now I have a beautiful girlfriend and I have a dog, which works well for me since I'm doing it full time. But if all of this was going around, I would probably be burned out. And while it is very important to work hard and have a steady schedule of what you need to do and what you want to do, you also need to know when to take a break, which has been a little bit of a problem for me, because I've always been working hard, and when I run into a wall or into a problem, I've been working even harder, which makes me have some periods where I lose my inspiration or motivation. Right now I'm in a period like that. I struggle with composing beats or composing good music. And the solution for me is usually to meet up in the studio with Ted or someone else I'm working with and just have a good time in there and we can get something going. I'm also working very closely with a guitarist and producer that's called Mark. He's called Mark Brave, his artist name. He is working his daytime job where I have my studio. So he just came in, he randomly played this guitar and I just hooked him in, and after that we started creating tracks together, and he's also one of those guys that gets me energy, and even if I'm down or low on inspiration, doing something together with him is lifts me up, and it usually like stays for a while after that as well. But when it comes to working hard, I don't really know how to put it, because I think everybody has their own ways to making things happen. And if you're a very talented musician, you don't have to work as hard as someone that pretty much has to learn way more. I would put myself in that pocket that I have to learn. I don't have it in my blood as many other has.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that really answered your question, but...
No, it does. And Luke, once again, man, we share that commonality of not scheduling in breaks. And for me, that'll inevitably end in a crash. Unfortunately, over the past year, I've really been able to manage that a lot better, of just thinking more long-term about my productivity. So of course I'm still thinking on a daily basis, how much can I get done? But I'm also thinking from a weekly and a monthly basis of how much rest do I take throughout the week to ensure that I can just consistently work hard. So I think that's probably going to be a struggle that we continuously have to learn and get better at over the span of our lives. So I completely feel you there, man. But I also, I love that mentality of, if you don't have like the God-given talent of just being a phenomenal musician, you have to hustle and you have to work hard, and similar to you, I put myself in that same boat. And I probably a majority of the musicians that I work with come from that work hard mentality. And then, of course you get the really talented instrumentalists or musicians that pop into your life and you're like, you are insanely good, which is, I'm grateful to have the opportunity to work with them. But, Luke, in closing, let's, for artists that are interested in working with Clover, what's some of the best advice that you could give them in regards to what kind of tracks and what quality you all are looking for from the label perspective?
That is a very good question. I think the most important when it comes to submitting a track to a label is being aware what kind of music that label actually releases. So there's some labels focusing on sleep music, some releasing more jazzy tunes, and some more of the old school lo-fi, the rough boom bap stuff. And I didn't really, when it came to all of these genres that were going around, it didn't really catch my ear when it came to that. And what I produced was something more of like pop instrumentals. So I have shifted what we are looking for from lo-fi more like to melodic chill beats, because that is what we are looking for. We are also looking for some of the more sleepy vibes as we're trying to get that as well. But I would say that when it comes to Clover, some of them better guidelines are to have some nice melodies in there, usually softer drums over harsher or really like transient drums. And A good mix. It might be weird to say, but a good mix. I can really hear a good mix because I also have some Mirhab. I have gone through maybe 12 or 13,000 tracks that these past years, and I can hear right away from like the first chord, or the first at least the first bar of what the mix is sounding like, and I really want a mix to sound like everything is put together to make sense. So both a sound selection that makes sense together, doesn't have to be a specific sound selection that other tracks in our playlist or our releases have, but it has to make sense together. So melodic chill beats, a proper mix where it all glues nicely together, some sweet melodies, and not too repetitive, of course. But all in all, it can't also take focus from the listener too much because we are using it as work and study music, and that's how we promote ourselves to the listeners. So it's a very, very thin line there of being a pop melody that really catches the ear, or just a nice melody that goes well in the background but is still interesting. So it's quite a vague explanation. Hear it when I say it, but somewhere around there, I would say that's what we're looking for. And the easiest way to catch up to it is just listen to our gaming playlist and listen to maybe 10, 15, 20 tracks, and listen to the drums, listen to the guitars. What are we accepting? What do we want to release and stuff like that. So, and as well, if you're sending tracks to us and you don't think you get the proper feedback on a declined track, feel free to reach out. I am online at least 15 hours a day on Discord, and I'm online at least 8 hours a day on Instagram as well if I'm not doing something else. So, and I will always try to give a solid feedback to a track so you know what you can improve after that when it comes to our submission process, at least.
And Luke, I think that was a great explanation, man. And you said submissions all take place on Discord?
All our submissions go through Discord, and we have a bot there, and we promise we won't take longer than 2 weeks to reply to anyone. So get in there and let us hear your tracks.
Awesome. Luke, hey, I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me, to share your story, to share more about Clover Records with the listeners of the Chilled Samples podcast. And I'm grateful that you're really helping push our community forward. And I really appreciate the integrity and the honesty that you have embodied within Clover, man. So I want to thank you for that, and hopefully we have many more years of the authentic community that we currently know and love moving forward. And I know that we will because of the work that you're doing. So, Luke, thank you very much, man.
Thank you, man. Thanks for having me. It's been super nice.
Of course, man. And I know you got some dinner plans. So we'll end it here. Everybody tuning in, as always, thank you for listening. I'm going to put Clover Records Discord link in the bio of the description. And I'll put Lo-Fi Luke. I'll put your Instagram on there too. So everybody, thanks again. Much love. Peace.